This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on legal aid. How do I access it? I am joined by Barrister Alexandra Adamu from 33 Bedford Road Chambers in London. Alex has a mixed practice and he regularly represents clients in various aspects of civil and commercial litigation, including in complex and multi-day cases. Alex has a keen interest in discrimination, whistleblowing, unfair and wrongful dismissal, and equal pay claims. Thank you so much for joining me today, Alex.
Oh, you're very welcome. Welcome to everyone that is tuning in to listen today on Legal Aid. I hope you find this talk informative. What can I say? I've been a barrister for, I believe, coming on 3 years now, and it's something that really impacts the vast majority of my clients. So it's something I thought I'd come in and see if I can't help people outside of that circle without needing to come and speak to me directly.
Yes, no, I hear you completely. I mean, and I was just saying to you, wasn't I, Alex, before we pressed record, that, for, you know, had a law firm now for almost 10 years. And if I got a pound for every time somebody called up and said, do you do legal aid? I would be very, very rich, because we don't actually do legal aid, but there's lots and lots of people that are trying to get access to it. But that's what we're here to discuss today, and hopefully we can give our listeners some really useful and key information. I mean, the state-run legal aid scheme as we know it today came into being in force in 1949 with the passage of the Legal Aid and Advice Act. The scheme was slow to establish itself, but by 1969, its annual net spending was around £13 million, which in today's value would have been around £197 million. A lot of money. So, I mean, one of the key things I think it's important to say that legal aid is regarded as central in providing access to justice by ensuring equality before the law, the right to counsel and the right to a fair trial. But let's talk about what legal aid actually is, Alex. Can you tell us that, please?
Of course. So legal aid at its most basic consideration is a government scheme to help individuals meet the cost of funding litigation and legal disputes. So that includes the costs of getting legal advice, family mediation, and representation in a court or tribunal. So that's the ground level, that's the bedrock. And when looking at what legal aid is, it's going to vary slightly depending on the area where your issue may well be. And it's also going to depend slightly on questions of eligibility and questions of the severity of the problem. But in terms of eligibility, we'll touch on that later when we actually talk about the mechanics of how do I get legal aid? What are the barriers to legal aid? So the first things you're always going to be looking at when you look at legal aid is, well, A, do you have a problem? If you don't, well, then don't pass go. We don't need to go any further. Everything's fine.
Absolutely.
Second point is, if you do have a problem, is it one that is capable of qualifying for legal aid? Because legal aid doesn't cover everything.
And we are going to, so we're going to go into speak about where the cuts were and what happened there. But yes, indeed, that's probably one of the key questions, along with do you qualify, which again, we will cover how to look at what you know, qualification looks like. But the areas of law that it covers at the moment, I mean, you've got the criminal sector and you've got the civil sector as the two headlines. But yes.
Exactly. And when thinking about it, a good rule of thumb is trying to take a step back and look at how serious the problem is. So if you're looking at the idea of you're at risk of serious harm or abuse, you're looking at a domestic violence issue, you're at risk of losing your home, you've been accused of a crime, or you're being discriminated against, or you're adding particularly complex legal arguments, or you're looking at things under the Human Rights Act, then those, as a general rule of thumb, are going to be where you're going to be looking for legal aid. If the point is, oh, my neighbour Bill down the road owes me money, the odds are the government's not going to pay for you to try and get that back. The court's going to say, well, actually, you should pay for that yourself. And just a final point, just on the broad spectrum of what legal aid is, if your problem is covered by legal aid will cover various aspects of helping to deal with your dispute. For example, advice on your rights and options, whether that be from the law firm that you contact or from a counsel such as myself. Help with negotiations and paperwork. Again, that will go through the firm that may well be dealing with your matter on a legal aid basis. But more importantly, if you're accused of a crime, legal aid will also cover your advice at a police station. So that's one thing you are entitled to when you are at a police station. It's something that you should always be offered, is the right to speak to a solicitor. And whether you do or not is obviously a matter for the individual in each individual circumstance. But don't let paying for that legal advice be a bar to asking the question and having a lawyer present at a police station. And then the final element is having a solicitor or barrister get your case ready and then represent you and speak on your behalf in court and make sure that they put your arguments forward in the best way that they can on the day. So I think that sort of basically covers what is legal aid and what does it cover as a broad spectrum analysis.
Yes, no, indeed. So the two main justice areas, as we've mentioned, is criminal legal aid, mainly covering work out in police stations and in the criminal courts in relation to people being investigated or charged with criminal offences, and civil legal aid, which includes work relating to care proceedings, asylum claims and judicial reviews. I think it's really important to note how big financially legal aid actually is. I mean, in 2019-2020, the gov.uk website has stated that the criminal legal aid budget in England and Wales was £897 million. However, in 2005-2006, just to compare it, the budget was at its peak at £1.56 billion. That's serious numbers. And then you look at the civil legal aid budget. It was at its peak in 2010-2011 with an expenditure of £1.2 billion. And then it was at its lowest at 2015-16 with expenditure of £651 million. But I built up Get Legally Speaking all around the fact that people need to get access to legal information that can be free when required. So in 2013, on the 1st of April 2013, there was massive cuts to legal aid from what we know as the Legal Aid Sentencing and Punishment of Offenders Act, the LASPO Act. So I want to talk about that a little bit more, Alex, and to talk about what were these legal aid cuts that occurred and how did that affect legal aid? Let's talk about that, please.
Of course, and I'll preface this bit by saying when in the legal community, as well as the community as a whole, legal aid and spending obviously is quite emotive when dealing with budgets. Where should money be spent? Where should it be cut? And you're always going to get very strong opinions on that. I'm going to be trying to keep my analysis purely on what the changes were and how do I feel that has affected access and provision of legal aid, rather than simply saying my opinion as to what I think and my result of what I believe the effect of the cuts were. Although for those that were or might be interested, the Law Society did produce a review of the LASPO Act and the changes in 2017, and the PDF is on their website. So if you do want to have a look at what some of the, I'll say, institutions within the legal sector and how they feel on the cuts, the information is out there. So let's just take it. The LASPO Act came into effect, and what it effectively did was replace the Access to Justice Act of 1999, which was the previous act that had dealt with and covered legal aid. And what the LASPO Act did was it changed the scope of what came into and what could be caught under legal aid. So under the Access to Justice Act, think of it almost like you've got two plates of food. under the Access to Justice Act, and we'll call the plate on the left plate A and the plate on the left plate B.
Plate on the under right.
Plate on the right. Yes, forgive me. I'm looking
don't
at my
get
own
the plates
hands and
mixed
I'm not getting
up,
it
Alex.
Right.
Yes.
So we've got the two plates. We've got plate A and plate B. A on the left, B on the right. Now, under the Access to Justice Act, you could take anything off plate A, so long as it wasn't on plate B. So to say, put it in slightly different terms, basically, under the Access to Justice Act, a legal matter was capable of qualifying for legal aid unless it was specifically excluded by a separate provision of legislation. What LASPO did is it reversed that. It basically turned it into, these are what's legal aid cover, everything else is by definition excluded. So it basically inverted the scope of legal aid.
So when we're looking at it in absolutely basic terms, and I'm saying this in basic terms because this is a part one of this subject, so we want to try and keep it as simple as we can.
Of course.
Areas provided for: family law, which come under civil matters, such as divorce or contact arrangements for children. However, there must be evidence of domestic violence, child abuse or child abduction. So in tribunals, legal aid has been reduced for immigration work only.
Yep.
And then when I look at the list, and then obviously criminal law in the areas that we discussed earlier, representation in a police station and representation at court. When we look at the list that's been removed, I mean, I have got debt, employment, housing, welfare benefits, clinical negligence, education and personal injury. They have been removed from legal aid cover. So legal aid will not cover, will not pay for legal assistance in those areas of law. And even in the areas that it does cover, and we just discussed literally three, family law, tribunals and criminal law in some areas, it's means tested. Right, Alex?
Exactly. And some areas of law have almost picked up their own ways of trying to sort of make up the difference. So you'll see in clinical negligence cases, there's been a lot of what we call conditional fee agreements, no win, no fee agreements. That's a lot of that has boomed because legal aid is now no longer available for those
types of cases. Goodness, I think at one point you couldn't turn on the television without hearing the word no win, no fee. So basically what we're saying is the no win, no fee sort of bubble of legal services really came into full force when legal aid was cut, particularly for personal injury, clinical negligence and sort of areas like that. Definitely on personal injury, I mean, car accidents and things, an accident at work and things like that. I think I'm starting to sound like one of those adverts. But that's when it actually started to really grow. And everybody, I think, has now heard of the term no win, no fee. But it doesn't replace legal aid. All it means is that a law firm or your legal assistance will be provided to you by your legal team, either taking a percentage of what they win for you, or your fees will be included for the losing party to pay. And if they don't win your case for you, you will have nothing to pay.
Exactly. Obviously, the terms of each individual agreement are different.
Yes.
So always read the fine print. Sorry for the lawyer to say it, but always read the fine print.
Yes, always read the small print. But what we're saying actually is that the areas provided for by legal aid are massively limited now.
They are. They're massively, massively narrowed. And they're all set out in what is called Schedule 1 of LASPO. Again, I don't recommend anyone just go and read it because it's quite long, it's quite dense. But if I just go through the headlines, it goes care, supervision and protection of children, special education needs, abuse of child or vulnerable adult, working with children, vulnerable adults, mental health and mental capacity, community care, facilities for disabled people, appeals relating to welfare benefits, unlawful removal from children. That's the theme we're going for. The coalition government, when implementing this directive, their headline statement was this was trying to direct legal funds to where it was most needed. And there are arguments back and forward as to what was kept in, what was kept out. So I won't purport to go into that. But what it did do was it massively limited, almost to a skeletal fashion, down to its bare bones, who can access legal aid. And then what it also did is it then also said, even for the cases where it is available, we're going to start implementing eligibility criteria. We're going to have means testing and capital testing. So effectively, what I mean by that is the government have set limits saying, if your disposable income is X or your disposable capital is X, and just to briefly explain the difference, income would end up being, for example,
your salary.
Salary.
Yep.
Or benefits, what is disposable at the end of the month, whereas capital might also be in assets or property, or for example your car, that will be considered as a capital asset that you have that goes towards the value. If you're above that threshold, the government says, well, actually no, we think you've got enough that you can pay. And understandably, for many people, especially those caught in the middle, they don't have masses and bags of money laying around, but they're also not on the breadline, they're not right at the bottom of the pile. They're going, well, what about me? Because I can't really afford. If we look at it, for example, I recently did a case, and it was a, I'll admit, it was a privately paying case, but it was a case that my client did qualify for legal aid, and it was a matrimonial finance matter, so it was the money matter relating to divorce. But we looked at the costs and the cost estimates, and over the course of the case, it was about £16,000. And the other side's costs, purely privately paying, were in the realm of about £60,000 of costs.
Doesn't now, surprise me, Alex. We do a lot of family work in Red Bar Law, and you know, it does not surprise me that when matters in divorce, and I know this podcast is not about divorce, when anything ends up in court and it's long and drawn out, the bigger the argument, the bigger the cost. But currently... Exactly. Currently, the income limit to be able to qualify for legal aid, gross income, must not exceed $12,475. Have I got that right?
Yes, you have. And
disposable.
Just again, for anyone that wants to have a look, just in case, because I know we can't cover everything in this, but there is a government document, and it's called the Current Legal Aid Financial Eligibility Rules Summary. And it's a form on the government website. You can go and look at it.
Yes. And then disposable annual income is less than £37,500. And so if you are thinking about applying for legal aid, your income will be the first hurdle that needs to be dealt with. If it's above £12,475 or disposable annual income is less than £37,500, then you're on the first stage of qualification. If the area of law that you're applying to get legal aid for is covered, as Alex earlier said, if it's a money dispute as I said, employment, housing, welfare benefits, all the areas that we mentioned that have been removed from the assistance of legal aid, you need to be within the remit that it covers. You need to be below the levels of income to qualify. So let's talk about applying for legal aid. We've already said that your dispute must be covered within the areas of law. We've said that it's means tested. So I think it's also important to mention, Alex, don't you think, that not all costs may be covered by legal aid, even if you do qualify for legal aid. For example, if you're in a money claim or a property claim that you do get legal aid for, and the legal aid agency says, well, actually, we will put something known as a statutory charge on a money or property claim that you may win.
Yeah, so that's obviously something that always has to be considered, especially with legal aid. Also, just on this point of what might or might not be covered by legal aid, always be communicating with the legal aid agency, or hopefully your representative is doing that, whoever that may be. Because that's obviously always going to be part. You need to make sure everything you are doing is covered under your legal aid certificate. That's what we mean when we say you've got legal aid. The legal aid agency has stamped a certificate saying you have been given funding for these issues, and they'll be listed on your legal aid certificate. And also what you may need to consider, and again, it depends on your means, is the legal aid agency may say, yes, well, this isn't covered, or we want a contribution. We think you're in that middle bracket. We want you to contribute to the fees. And that also effectively means that at the end of your case, when the case has come up, it doesn't mean you get to walk away, even if you have won. It doesn't mean you get to walk away not having paid anything and still having had the benefit of the win. it may be in your individual circumstance that the legal aid agency says, okay, well, now that you've won a substantial amount, this is something that you now need to contribute to. And one point that is very interesting in this, and it's very, I found it very relevant in a couple of cases that I've done, is where my clients have received a lump sum payment that would take them above the threshold for universal credit. So effectively, they've received a large sum of money, or a relatively large sum of money, that's taken them out of the universal credit threshold, and has put them into a bracket where a contribution is then required.
So hold on a moment. Where have they received this lump sum from? Is it from family or friends, or is it from the case itself?
From the case itself.
Right. So, and once it was dealt with, or sort of along the way where costs have been awarded or something?
So it could be either way. In the cases that I've dealt with, it's been at the end. So it's been a consideration that me and the legal team have had to take into account when considering offers to settle or likelihood of success and general outcome, because of the costs that have previously been incurred. But it could also have been, if an interim payment has been made, that would be taken into consideration as well, which is why I say you have to be in communication with the legal aid agency. It's not the case that your means is tested when you start and that's it. Because otherwise...
That's actually a really important point, Alex, if you think about it. Because if your financial circumstances do change, even as your case is going on and you've qualified for legal aid, then you are under a duty to inform your legal representative if they are dealing with the legal aid agency for you, or you are under a duty to inform the legal aid agency directly if you have somehow set that up yourself.
Exactly. And this goes from, and I'm not saying it has to be, oh, okay, I've made £500 less than I did last year. But for example, if someone has started bankruptcy proceedings or insolvency proceedings in relation to your company, if you're made redundant or dismissed, those sort of key, very crucial factors that significantly impact your income, you need to let them know. And much in the same way as you also need to let them know if something very good happens.
Yeah,
exactly. You get promoted, or you win the lottery.
I was just going to say the lottery. Yes.
The legal aid agency might give you some looks and go, well, why are we paying for your case?
Well, this is it. I think, you know, transparency in these sorts of situations are obviously very, very key, because you don't ever want to be caught out where you've qualified for legal aid under genuine circumstances. You've gone all the way through your legal case, and the average legal case can last 1 year, 2 years, and we all know some that have lasted a lot longer than that. And circumstances change throughout. You're continuing to tap into legal aid, and actually your qualification has gone below the threshold of you being able to qualify for it. So, and then you've got the legal aid agency who can bring a charge or make a claim against you. As I said, it's known as a statutory charge on any money or property you own if legal aid has been paid to you, paid out for you, should we say, on your legal matter, where it shouldn't have.
Exactly. And on the statutory charge, and why it's something that is very, very important, and something that's very much you need to keep in consideration, whilst it's not the default response from the legal aid agency, a statutory charge on money or property that you win, it effectively means that they are registering their costs, or the costs that they've incurred, as a debt against you. And it then means that they can look at enforcing that debt.
Yes.
In the way that someone else might seek to do so, whether that be through selling a property, bringing a claim themselves, or even, as you might see on a number of television programs or bits and pieces, instructing bailiffs and getting writs and warrants of control for property equal to the value. I would say that on this point, if you do have any concerns, again, transparency is key, communication is key, but the legal aid agency also has a secured debt team, which, again, you can Google it, it's all on their website, and they've even got an email address and a telephone number, and you can discuss with them how to pay. Exactly. If I had a pound for every time I've looked at a case and my client has known they should do something about it, but has buried their head in the sand and made the matter far worse than it would have been had they just sent an email or made a call when a problem first arose, things would be very, very different. So, as I say, always keep up to date and let them know. Worst case scenario, they say, oh, we didn't need to know that.
Yeah,
it's nothing.
I think that's
matter.
Absolutely key, isn't it? In any situation, actually, you know, involving life in general, I'd say communication is the key. Being transparent, being honest, and even if you made a mistake or an error, or you genuinely didn't realise something, or you've buried your head, as you said, you've buried your head in the sand, and just for a little bit, just lift it up and say, right, really sorry, this is the situation. You know, I'd like to sort this out. This is what I could afford. And again, transparency will always be on your side. Alex, that's all we've got time for.
Well, thank you very much for having me again.
Thank you. It's been really, 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 really insightful. And I'm sure that many, many people out there are going to get a good, good understanding of what we've been saying, because it is a big subject. And as I was saying to you earlier, today, again, before we press record, you know, there's so much we can say on this topic. So there will definitely be a part two. So thank you very much, Alex, for the part one. And I will bother you again for our part two to bring your expertise and legal knowledge to all of our listeners.
Anytime. Happy to be here.
Thank you, Alex. And I'll say to our listeners, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.